Is there a better time of the year than this? That was a rhetorical question. No, there is not. Hashtag mayhem. We are into the NCAA tournament, folks. What a regional weekend it was for all of the 16-seeded teams. They all move on, and now it's time for the Super Dupers, getting ready for the Super Regionals. We got every pitch for you coming your way on the ESPN networks for you. Hey, you got Doc Mo, you got Horo, you got Scarborough, Smitty, Jimmy Softball. It's the 7 Innings podcast. We are in the postseason, and coming up on the show today, little Tom Cruise Top Gun reference. We feel the need.
Hold on, before you start, before you get into your first thing.
Excuse me, Doc Mo.
Doc Mo, we have a new nickname. And I also noticed this weekend that you weren't calling any of these games. Where were you?
Yeah, where were you, Beth?
I went silent. I went back to my alma mater to get my doctor of letters, as we call it, the D-Lit, which now I can, you know, put at the end of my name. So it's Dr. Moen's B-A-M-S D-Lit. And my specialty is
B-Lit. B-Lit.
I am now a lexicologist.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yes. So anything you need, word snobbery, I've got it for you. Yes.
What's your favorite letter, though?
My specialty is L-M-N-O-P.
Yeah.
Speaking of P, I haven't changed one bit, by the way. There's some renovations going on here at the house, so I am now podcasting from the ladies' lounge at my house.
Are you sitting on the commode?
No, I am not.
That's all we needed to know.
There's a lot of good counter space in here though. So that's where we are podcasting from. Jimmy Softball is just shaking his head.
That's TMI
right
of
now.
A PhD, hey. Right there.
TMI of a
PhD. You know, Dr. Mullins, back to you.
You know what we got coming up on the show? We're going to recap all the regionals, including what went down. A lot of people talking about the Northwestern pitchers and the illegal pitches. We're dubbing it the Sunset Skirmish, right off of Sunset Boulevard there in Westwood. It's Arizona and UCLA.
We're dubbing it?
Well, I'm gonna see if we can get any traction on that on social media. The Sunset Skirmish. We're gonna be shagging stats. We're gonna talk Norman Conquest. That continues 2 weeks away for the Sooners from the three-peat, if they can get it done. And of course, we've got some gimme some Jimmy as well. So you've got your lineup card. Hopefully you're following us on social media at 7 Innings Podcast. The need for seed. It's the second year in a row, gang. All 16 seeds win and advance to the Supers. There were a couple of stumbles out there. Most notably, UCLA had to come out of the loser's bracket. But all of them survived to move on. Scarborough, what did you notice out and about around the nation as you were watching games at the regionals?
I noticed softball on TV all weekend long, and it was awesome. So I felt like when I wasn't on TV or on the internet, then I just get to watch it in my hotel room, and that's always the best. But I said this, I think, last week after we saw the bracket. There just seems to be such a separation between Oklahoma and the Pac-12 and the SEC plus Florida State. And I think that you see that with the top 16 seeds advancing for 2 years straight now. I would really like to see some of the other conferences getting in on the action and really having some true parity with the top conferences that are year in and year out and the other conferences too. I think it's a little bit unfortunate that there weren't any true upsets.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in on that as well. You know, first off, I thought some of the mid-major teams did a really good job. We give a lot of love, obviously, to the power conferences because of the strength of them. So seeing some of those upsets, I thought was showing that there's parity throughout the level of athleticism. And then the other thing that I noticed is that you have you have softball where it's showing that the full body of work, in other words, the whole season is so important because the seed being seeded does count. So it's not just one or two good weekends. It's got to be a great season, leading into the postseason. Get that seed. It makes your life a lot easier.
What did you guys think of what happened with the Northwestern pitcher? We saw a ton of illegal pitches, and I guess moving that forward, I mean, is this going to be something that is just from crew to crew? determining when they're going to call it and not. I mean, this just came out of nowhere.
It's so unfortunate to sit there and watch a game. And how many was it, Beth? Like 40-something? I just think it's so unfortunate for the game. And I think that that's definitely the next rule that we need to get figured out as a softball community of what we're going to do with it and how we want it to represent our game and the viewer and the fan and the teams that are competing.
So I have a question for you guys about this, because I remember the year that we got to the World Series and, you know, these illegal pitches aren't called all through the regular season, and then they get called in postseason, which is sort of unfair to the athletes. But I also want to say is that there's a lot of pitchers working really hard out there to be legal. And so aren't we doing a huge disservice to these pitchers who are, you know, really working to keep their form and be legal if we are changing the rule because some people can't get legal? I just think it's a really interesting topic.
No, I agree with you, Holly. It absolutely is an interesting topic. It's part of the reason why I think Kelly Barnhill this year has 17 home runs hit off of her, 5 all of last year. So it's very difficult. A mechanical issue to fix, Amanda, and we talk about it all the time. It's something that takes hours and hours, if not years, to fix, really keep that foot down. It affects you if you're not used to it. And again, it is not right to let pitchers get away with it all year long and then call it in the postseason. It needs to be called from day one, or they need to adjust the rule. And then again, as you said, Holly, how fair is that with everybody else trying to fit in, keep the foot down versus those that can't and rewarding them?
You know, I had a conversation with, this was a few years ago, with the supervisor of officials for the NCAA. And basically what they said was, if you can't see it with the naked eye, so if you're on the softball field and you're at first and third and behind home plate and you don't see that they are illegal, you can't call it. And I think one of the things we're seeing is a lot of people at home are seeing the replays and seeing it in slow motion. So there's this whole discussion of what can be seen with the naked eye by the officials versus the perception out there like, oh, so-and-so is illegal. Well, if you don't see it, you can't call it. So I do think there's some real discrepancies on how that's officiated.
Such a great point, Holly.
Holly, if I can jump in there too, the umpires are looking at a whole lot of things. It's not like they're just staring at the pitcher's feet or just staring at the pitcher's release. You know, they're also covering bases, they're covering runners, you know, everything else that goes into it. It's not like it's one ump is just staring at a foot.
Yeah, it's a tricky topic, that's for sure. There's no easy answer for it, except that if you see someone being illegal, you have a moral obligation to call it. And if you've kind of been letting things slide all season and you start doing it in postseason, that's just as unfair.
I will say, Beth, about Northwestern and all those illegal pitches that they had called against them, the way that I saw them fight on, and I tweeted this too, on Saturday and Sunday, I thought their entire team showed so much fight through that adversity that they faced, and they got down, they were able to work through it, and you still saw every single person on that team fighting to still try to get a win on Sunday.
Yeah, they sure did, and they were able to bounce back and put some pressure on. You just hope now moving forward that it's not a topic that we're talking about the way we were talking about the obstruction business last year at the World Series. The other thing that, of course, that the regional did, and we're gonna run through and try and talk about all of the super regional matchups as we get set for next weekend. But one thing that, of course, was set up were some rematches from a year ago, with Oregon, Kentucky, and LSU, Florida State. And I guess we'll start there down in Tallahassee, because LSU went in there last year, and for the second year in a row, they won a road super. Can they make it 3 straight as we get ready for LSU, Florida State? Or how can Kylie Hansen and company turn the table? You want to talk about terrific pitchers there with Hansen and Megan King, and of course, Allie Wall-Jasper, and we did see Carly Hoover again back in the circle a little bit for LSU.
Yeah, well, Beth, you're a doctor of letters now. Can you spell Michaela Schlattman?
S-C-A-L-A-T-T-M-A-N.
Two T's, two N's, I think.
I said two T's.
Man. Yeah, these last 2 weeks, though, you need to know her name. If you're an LSU fan, you probably already know her name. But like outside of that, when you watch her play in the Super Regional this weekend, she's been incredible for LSU. They needed somebody else to step up in their offensive lineup and hit the ball. And she's been dropping bombs almost every single game and has really brought some spunk and some extra explosiveness to their lineup to help back up those two pitchers that they have.
Yeah, the other thing I really think is exceptional about what LSU has done now, it's 11 consecutive NCAA elimination game wins in the regionals and the supers. They had to do it again in that final elimination game after they lost to Louisiana. So they got a lot going for them. Florida State, meanwhile, has Kylie Hansen. What was it? A no-hitter and a one-hitter against Jacksonville State. And they already have played five SEC games this year. They're 3-2, including that dramatic win over Auburn in the regional. So that's one to watch. The other rematch will be Oregon and Kentucky. And what a different, really, Oregon team and Kentucky team from a year ago. The Cats are going in there swinging some big bats. And, of course, the Ducks have shown tremendous toughness and have had outstanding pitching.
Well, I think playing at the Jane is one for the record. I mean, that place is going to be rocking and rolling like it always does. They love that team. Their pitching staff looks strong. The thing that I feel like is different for Oregon this year is their mentality. They are confident. They've got great senior leadership. They have, you know, DJ Sanders at shortstop, who is a huge addition. So that Oregon team is fun. But yeah, you can't count out Kentucky because they've got one of the strongest strength of schedules. So they've been beat up all year long. So I think they're used to playing in very volatile environments, and it could be just enough to spark them. Young pitching staff, but I think Kentucky's going to show up and have some fun out.
Yeah, and major shout out to Lauren Burke, who had two pinch hit home runs for Oregon this past weekend. You know that your team's feeling good whenever you get that production coming off the bench. So to not only do it one time, but to do it two times against a great pitching regional, it seemed like, especially going up against Drake, that was a very solid team. So shout out to that Drake team and their season with Nicole Newman leading the way. But Oregon just looks just extremely strong.
We see them, you know, they've been able to get to the World Series quite a bit under Mike White, and it's something like 6 out of the last 7 years or something crazy. But, you know, we always feel like they don't quite perform up to the level that they are capable of. So they're great all regular season, and they get to the World Series and they kind of don't leave it all on the field for whatever reason. So I'm really excited that this year, I feel like this team has the right pieces and has the right mental makeup. They're stronger mentally. So, you know, if they can get past Kentucky, this is a team I feel like could win it all and could really challenge for the title, because I feel like they finally have all the pieces. Now, can they perform to that level of the World Series? That's been their bugaboo for the last several years.
Yeah, and the shortfall has been the clutch hitting in those big elimination games at the World Series. Shout out to Kentucky, too, the 3 run rule wins, and they got a couple of grand slams from Shaper and Metzger, so they're coming in with a lot of confidence as well heading out west. Moving down the lineup card, how about the Sunset Skirmish, everybody? It's just off of... Well, not quite the Sunset Strip, but Sunset, you can hit one out on the Sunset if you hit a long home run. And you don't, if you're not a tree slugger like Aaliyah Jordan, one might get out there. But we're so excited about Arizona and UCLA, the two premier programs in college softball over the years. And for the first time in their history, they're going to get together in a super regional. They have been so good for so long, Smitty. They have not faced each other except in the World Series. That's how good they've been as we get set for a wild weekend in Westwood.
Yeah, and that, I think, makes this Super Regional so compelling. I almost, you know, fall off my seat when I saw that they've never faced each other before the Women's College World Series. And, you know, rightfully so, because it's like a championship matchup when these two programs get together simply because of their history. So I'm looking forward to being out there and seeing them. Rachel Garcia, I think, is a story of just an outstanding effort in regionals on both sides of the plate. I think one of the questions, though, is I know she's got a little bit of a cut on her finger. She threw over 500 pitches in that regional. Didn't seem like it affected her. So as long as she is healthy, I think the Bruins are looking good. They did sweep Arizona in Pac-12 play at Arizona this year.
Yeah, and if I recall that series, Michelle, that you're talking about, I don't think that Rachel Garcia started one game in that series. I think she came in relief for every single game of it. And because she was coming off of some shoulder soreness or arm soreness, whichever, just a different type of injury that she had later on. But I think that will be interesting whenever they go to match up against each other, is to see her actually start a game. And that finger is a little bit tricky as a pitcher, feeling the seams, feeling the ball with your fingertips and trying to spin it. And she threw a ton of pitches, because think about that 500 doesn't even include her warm-up pitches in between innings.
Dun, dun, dun. That brings us back to our first flashback of UCLA, Arizona, when Megan Leyenfeld had to literally super glue her finger together to get through the World Series and win a national championship. So I'm pretty sure they'll know the old super glue trick out in Westwood if they have to go that far.
Dun, 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 dun. That brings us to Arizona UCLA flashback number two. Speaking of hands, Holly Rowe, it was all hands on deck for that regular season three-game series at Hillenbrand. It was out in the desert, so this time it'll be at UCLA. How about these numbers? In the three games, all UCLA wins. The teams combined for 36 runs on 42 hits, 9 home runs, with 13 different pitchers involved in those three games. So we're expecting a lot of fireworks.
Did that game go 17 innings, or did any of those games go 17 innings?
It did not go 17, but we're expecting the Sunset Skirmish to be something special.
Can I just throw out the Battle of Bel Air?
That's another good one.
Skirmish doesn't sound dramatic enough. Like, this is war. This is blood. Well, this is...
That's a good discussion. A lot of people don't like the war terminology in sports. I don't necessarily mind it. You could go with the war in Westwood too, but Battle of Bel Air. Battle of Bel Air is kind of nice.
Doc Mo dropping
By the way, it's been kind of one-sided of late. So something for Arizona fans to grab hold of. They have lost 15 of the last 17 meetings. Okay. And in the last 14 years, UCLA has only lost one series.
Wow.
So if you look at this as best 2 out of 3 series, oh boy, the numbers definitely favor UCLA at home. Coming up on the podcast, Mike Candrea. It's time to bear down with Arizona.
Joining us now is Arizona coach Mike Candrea. And coach, when I first saw this bracket, I thought, oh my gosh, if everything plays out, like we think it might. Holy Toledo.
Yeah.
What did you think when you first saw the bracket?
Well, you know, it's at this stage of the game, Holly, it's, you know, you got to play good teams to get where you want to go. And so, obviously, our storied history of UCLA, Arizona is definitely adds a little bit to it. But, you know, we're just really happy right now that we are moving on and getting an opportunity to play the Super Regionals and hopefully move from there.
You know, with all the history of this rivalry over the years, I think this is the first time that it's actually you guys are going to meet in Super Regional.
Yeah.
So what? How does that change the dynamic?
Well, you know, back in the day when we used to just go from regionals right to the World Series, the way the format is now, you can definitely see an opportunity for conference schools to have to play one another. And I think last year what Oregon and UCLA had to play. Yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, we're just excited and happy and look forward to going to Westwood and competing. You know, they're a very good team, top to bottom. Rachel Garcia is a very good pitcher, and so we're trying to figure things out, and hopefully we can give them our best shot. You know, I think Taylor right now is throwing very well, and offensively, we've gone through our struggles a little bit this year, but, you know, we're a young team and mostly sophomore dominated. So to me, every opportunity and every experience that we can have, it does nothing but add to that database and will help us in the future. But I like the team and I like what we have and looking forward to the competition.
Yeah, 5 players hitting 300 or higher. I feel like your offense has been very good at times this year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you met UCLA earlier this season. What adjustments do you want to see that offense make?
Well, you know, I think when we met them, we were kind of in a little bit of a rut. We had just come off of a Washington series where we had a couple games get away from us, which I think really kind of put it in a little bit of a tailspin because right after Washington, we had UCLA and Oregon. And, you know, that's a gauntlet, I mean, for sure. But very good teams. And to be honest with you, I really feel like we weren't playing at our very best. And so, you know, I think we're a different team right now. And I think that those trials and tribulations that we had to go through for young kids is a tough lesson. But it's one that you know, in order for you to develop your database and understand this game, and, you know, everyone at one time is going to have to go through something like that. So I thought it made it stronger, and I really believe the ASU series coming back and winning the last two games really kind of gave us a boost of confidence, and ever since then we've been playing fairly well.
And then, you know, I think we've talked about this before, and this has been done ad nauseum about me, but, you know, Taylor McClellan is such a unique story. And, you know, a pitcher trying to hit these precise spots, who's, you know, actually legally blind in one eye, and just what this woman has overcome to be really good at a very specific job in sports. I find it fascinating. How has she gotten so good at this?
Well, you know, a lot of hard work. Taylor has learned how to deal with her deficiencies physically, and she amazes me. I mean, she really does, and I'm really happy right now because I think if there's one area that she's improved upon, it's not so much the physical part, but the mental part of the game. I think she's finally starting to understand that, you know, there's going to be some ups and downs in the game, and you have to learn how to stay positive, and you have to really work at it, and you know, because if you don't, then you're a pitcher. You feel like you're on an island by yourself, and that's not a good feeling. And I think, you know, really she's starting to embrace some things that we've worked very hard on with her, you know, body language and all the little things that kind of dictate your mindset. And to me, I think that's what the difference right now. She's got a completely different mindset right now. She's I'm just really pleased where she's at.
Great. Well, I don't want to keep you too long, but I just wanted to get your last thoughts on, do you have a favorite game or moment from the Arizona UCLA series over the years?
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, that's you, but you're like, oh my gosh, that was awesome.
Well, you know, I don't remember the exact year, but I know we were playing at Hillenbrand, and they were one run away from run ruling us in the fifth inning, and we came back and not only tied the game, but won the game. And I thought it was probably one of the greatest performances I've seen, but there's been so many. I mean, it's, you know, they have tremendous athletes and a tremendous tradition, and, you know, we have done the same. In fact, you know, our next All-American will be number 100, which is hard to believe. Yeah, it is. But, yeah, it's just every time we get together, it's always a great time for our alumni to get together and come join and root for the Cats, and their alumni are very, very good. And, you know, the one great thing about me being old is I've been able to kind of live through this history. And UCLA was the standard, you know, and when I came here in 85, that was my goal, is trying to find a way that we could compete with them. And, you know, 91 was a pretty special year when we won a national championship, our first. But there's been some really good World Series games, and, you know, it's always been great to compete against Sharon Backus back in the day, and Sue Enquist, and now Kelly. You know, I think it's a rivalry, but it's a friendly rivalry from the coaches' viewpoints. Right. But truthfully, our fans get after it. I mean, they love that date. They circle that date, and it's kind of neat.
Let's move on. The 7 Innings podcast continues. We're going to talk SEC Pac-12. We're going to shag some stats. We still got to cover the Norman Conquest going on out at Oklahoma. And, of course, give me some Jimmy. Let's talk about the next three super regionals that are head-to-head SEC versus Pac-12. We got some bragging rights. Well, of course, one of those, we've already talked about that UK-Oregon matchup. How about South Carolina at ASU? And what are we looking for in that one?
I just got a chance to see Arizona State last weekend. They looked really strong, you guys. I don't feel like that many people are talking about Arizona State, and I really feel like they've flown under the radar this year. G. Juarez and Bree Maha actually split innings going into the series. If I just was an innocent bystander and thought who was going to pitch the majority of the innings, I would have said G. Juarez, but they actually split innings. And their offense, just 1-9, a very, very, very athletic team that they have, that are just dynamic offense, powerful, can use a short game, and a really strong defense. They're really good. So South Carolina's going to have their hands full with Arizona State, especially playing in Tempe.
Yeah, I agree with that, Amanda. But I think for South Carolina, what's going to help them out. They lead the SEC with 65 home runs. They're going out to the desert where the ball flies. So there could be some fireworks. And I do agree they're going to have to figure out a way to hit the left-handed pitching. But, we talked about it. It's very heavy left-handed lineups and left-handed pitchers. So it's going to be interesting. What's the over and the under on the number of home runs hit in that series?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, they're going to have to outscore Arizona State. I would think so. So, and to your point, South Carolina has the ability to do it, Michelle.
Can I ask one quick question for Michelle? Do you remember last year, or maybe it was the year before, you did that copious report on the air in the desert and why the ball flies further? Is there some legitimate science to this? Could you give us a 30-second reminder of why the ball flies in the desert?
It's because part of it is altitude, and that what we actually did that in Tucson at the University of Arizona. So it was the air, the thinness, I guess you could say, of the air. It's a little bit different in Scottsdale, I believe. It's probably a little bit thicker, but it's definitely the thinness of the air. And a lot of people think it's humidity as well, or lack thereof, and it's actually not. The ball actually flies just as well, or more so, in a humid environment. So it's mostly the altitude, and there was a couple other points that from this morning is taken out of my brain. So my oatmeal brain. Exactly.
I'm only a doctor of letters. I'm not a scientific doctor, so I cannot comment on the tussle in Tempe or the dingers in the desert.
I love it, dingers in the desert.
But the ball, guys. Barbara, the ball was flying. The ball at BP on Thursday when I got there, the ball was flying during the day. And because it's like hotter at 3 and 4 o'clock and it's going to be triple digits next week at like 106, 107, the ball is flying.
I'm just getting a word in from Vegas Vicky. Everybody, Vegas Vicky, the dingers in the desert over under is set at 10 combined. Right. 10 home runs. So you may have to hope it goes three games, that Arizona State, South Carolina matchup. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
How about Bama and UW? These guys, I think this will be the third postseason meeting in the last 4 years. And this time, though, Alabama's got to head out west, Smitty.
Well, the question is Taryn Alvelo. How effective can she be? She's been injured. She only threw 3 innings in this regional. She is absolutely not as sharp as she was earlier in the year. Her ERA in her last couple starts is a 3.5 as opposed to an ERA under 1. So that's a big question for Washington. But the bright news, or the good news for Washington, is Gabby Plain has been outstanding. And her drop ball, incredible. She's mixing speeds very well. That freshman from Australia has really taken up the reins and led this program. Their bats finally came alive in the championship game of the regional. So Washington is looking good. Now, the question for Alabama to me is always about Lexi Osorio. Can she be efficient, get her strikeouts, and not walk batters? If she walks a lot of Washington batters, she's going to be in trouble because they can run.
Yeah, and to that point, remember, Alabama went out to Seattle in March. Washington beat them twice, and in one of those games, Osorio got lit up. So a big opportunity for her to come back a little stronger, or is it Washington that's going to go into that with a lot of confidence with that lineup of Van Zee and DuPont and Bates? They all were swinging pretty well in the regional.
But so is Alabama. Alabama's offense seems to be coming alive. And to me, I put it all too on Demi Turner being a spark plug for them. When she's rolling and getting on base and making things happen, they seem to be a different offense, as well as Bailey Hemphill. She's been dropping bombs too. So their offense seems to be clicking pretty well right now behind Osorio.
They call it home field advantage for a reason. So to me, as much as I've loved South Carolina and their Cinderella season and their story, I think teams like that and Alabama that played at the Rhodes House this weekend, I think when they go on the road, they're going to lack some of that energy from their home fans and their home crowd. So how do they generate that and how do they overcome that? Because I feel like that is something that maybe we underestimate, is that feeling of being at home with thousands behind you in these big moments.
Yeah, Holly, we talked about it earlier this year, how many of the home teams in the SEC series won. And it's the same thing in the Pac-12. It is so much easier to win at home. I think that's absolutely a great point, especially in the Supers.
And congratulations to Alabama. 14th consecutive year we've been playing Super Regionals, and the Tide have reached the Supers every single time. They're the only one that can boast of that. They will be out at Washington this weekend. Moving down the lineup card, we also, you know, as good as the SEC has been with everybody in the league into the tournament, nine teams hosting, they all move on. It's a record nine teams into the Supers. So you've got a couple of head-to-head SEC versus SEC. And, of course, that would feature the number two seed Florida Gators at home against Texas A&M. And, Amanda, you had a up-close and personal look at that one during the regular season, a sweep for the Gators.
Yeah, that's right, Beth. I did already, funny enough, see this matchup during the regular season, all three games, actually, in Gainesville, too. So exact same setting that we have going on, Michelle. I know you're laughing at me. But yeah, Florida swept that series, outscored A&M 23-4. And then remember that A&M and Florida faced each other in last year's Women's College World Series, and Florida beat A&M then too. It's just something about when A&M plays Florida now that they move to the SEC, it's a bit of an intimidation thing, it seems to me. A&M's a very strong team, very veteran team, experienced. But for some reason, when they go up against Florida, they seem to have more nerves. So maybe this weekend might be different, with a lot of those seniors having their entire careers on the line, and maybe they're able to work through that in Gainesville this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a tough matchup for Texas A&M, and I know it breaks your heart, Amanda, being an alum. I feel bad for you on top of everything that you were just talking about. It is hard. I was watching Oklahoma State this weekend at regionals, and I was like, oh, it's hard. It's hard sometimes, but we know you're going to do a great job out there calling that series.
Can I say one thing about Florida? Is I know you guys already know I'm obsessed with Alicia Ocasio because I talk about it all the time. But you know, her evolution as a pitcher and becoming a pitcher that they can count on this season. I think she threw an incredible, I think it was the first no hitter in seven innings in postseason history. Yeah. But I just think that her role that they've asked her to fill this season is very different from what they asked her to do last year. And she's doing it, and she's doing it well. So I feel like Barnhill having some backup in Ocasio makes Florida even more dangerous this year. And I just can't say enough about this young lady.
Yeah, Ocasio with the combo no-hitter and then the no-hitter. She also hit a home run. So the Gators go in there winners of 19 of their last 20. And when you think about Ocasio and then a few years back, Lauren Hager, two of the most versatile talents that we've seen in the college game in a long time. And for her to follow up what Hager has done and now try and win a second national championship would be pretty impressive, Amanda.
I would think, too, that it takes some pressure off of Barnhill, as Holly kind of alluded to there, to where maybe now Barnhill can go and pitch a little bit more free, knowing that Ocasio has her back and that she has Ocasio's back. That's just a really strong 1-2 punch, and Barnhill has struggled with giving up home runs. So I feel like if A&M's going to have a chance against a team with Barnhill pitching, they're going to have to hit a few home runs off of Barnhill, because that's usually how you can score against her.
All right, and then that other head-to-head SEC showdown would be Tennessee at Georgia. Georgia won the regular season series, and Georgia continues, I think, to impress people nationwide with their ability to overcome the injury to Brittany Gray. They keep on winning. Alyssa DiCarlo was spectacular in the regional, and as Coach Lou likes to call it, her crew 22. It's everybody, any day, can get the job done. It's a real selfless team that has come together at the right time, and now they are two wins away from moving on to the World Series, guys, but they got to get through a familiar foe.
Well, Tennessee to me is all going to be about keeping the ball in the park. So Maddie Moss, Kalen Arnold are going to need to mix speeds, keep the ball low in the zone, and not let the Bulldogs elevate their pitches, because that's one of the things that the Bulldogs do so well, is they take pitches that are belt high or shoulder high, and they bash it out of the park. So if they can keep and really hammer the low part of the zone and keep the ball in the park, I think it bodes very well for Tennessee. And then you have Tennessee with a lot of speed. They're going to need to get on base. They're going to need to try and mix things up. Avant and Bass for UGA are not power pitchers. They're not going to strike you out a lot. So I think that Tennessee is going to have to really make contact, put the Bulldog defense in motion, and try to be productive in that manner.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really high scoring super regional when you think about Georgia and Tennessee and their offenses. And Caitlin Arnold and Maddie Moss for Tennessee haven't looked really sharp coming down the stretch. And with Georgia, those pitchers are doing a great job. However, I feel like Tennessee offense can score and generate some runs against them. So I think that this is going to be a high powered offense, a lot of home runs and balls leaving the park. But DiCarlo, you mentioned, Beth, and Justin Mills has been outstanding too.
And something else to keep your eye on, Megan Gregg heading back home to Georgia. Will she end her career in her home state, or will the greatest power hitter in Tennessee history help get her team back to the Women's College World Series and win that elusive crown? That is the team with the most wins in World Series history that has yet to win a championship. Can they get through Georgia to give themselves another chance? Hey, let's flash back right now to 1991. And since we've been talking Arizona, UCLA, how about the first of their seven finals going head-to-head, Arizona and UCLA, and the Cats would beat the Bruins back in 91, 5-1 to win that championship. It was the first crown for Arizona, and at the series, Debbie Day was 4-0 in the circle, while Julie Jones hit .315. Our flashback to 1991, Arizona and UCLA.
Time now for Shaggin' Stats. I just want you to know that our Shaggy Stats is making waves because I was in the PA, the press box at UCLA, and their PA announcer / SID extraordinaire, James Eberna, said, should I do this announcement in my Shaggy Stats voice? So I just want you to know we're blowing up over here. Blowing up. So my Shaggin' Stats for today is actually a very special strikeout. Cal State Fullerton has been encouraged, inspired all season long by their freshman pitcher, Taylor Dawkins, who's battling a rare form of liver cancer. She got into the circle against UCLA for the first time since April and threw a strikeout in her first moment in the circle, a beautiful moment inspiring Cal State Fullerton. Kelly Ford really doing a great job out there, and I just thought it was a special moment for Shaggin' Stats.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to jump on in here. My Shaggin' Stat, Holly Rowe, is Jenna Keene from the University of Arizona, freshman. She had an outstanding regional. She picked up 5 hits in her 8 at-bats, a .625 average, a slugging percentage of .750, 6 total bases. So the fresh, she is from California, so I'm sure she's going to have a little extra inspiration going into this UCLA Super, and that's my Shaggin' Stat.
Yeah. Oh, good job.
Because I just got back from the desert in Tempe just a couple of hours ago, I'm going to go with G. Juarez from Arizona State, .88 ERA, which is the best among any remaining pitcher in the field. Still the lefty from the desert, the sophomore, top 10 finalist for National Player of the Year.
And my Shaggin' Stats is about the Arkansas Razorbacks. This is their 8th trip to the NCAA tournament. In 6 of their last 7 postseasons, they have been knocked out in Norman, Oklahoma. And guess where they're headed this weekend? Back to Norman for their first Super Regional. Can they get it done this time? Or will the Norman conquest continue for the Sooners on Shaggin' Stats?
You give her the title of doctor and she brings it.
Yeah,
she's got a nickname
absolutely
for everything. She's got a new announcer voice. She's all over it.
Lexicology.
Never been
for
so
my
proud.
Shaggin' Stat, I'm going to go with a little bit bigger picture stuff here. National seeds this weekend. We've already talked about how all 16 advanced, but they were 50-3 in the tournament, and there was 31 shutouts and 19 run rule games. So those are some really, really big numbers. Whoa. And then the other number I want to give you guys is 48, because that's the number of teams that are done for the season right now. We've only got 16 left. So think about all those players and all those teams that ended this weekend. Some of them play in their last softball of their college careers.
It's always a bittersweet moment. Some amazing seasons, some amazing careers coming to an end last weekend. Some more will come to an end this weekend in the Supers. But in Norman, Oklahoma, they are hoping that their quest will be ongoing as we move down to number 8 here on our lineup card on the 7 Innings podcast. Doc Moe, Ho-Ro, Scarborough, Smitty, Jimmy Softball. Does the Norman conquest continue against, really, I guess, the Cinderella story of the Arkansas Razorbacks? OU looked awfully good last week in the regionals, gang. They outscored the opposition 24-0. What are we thinking?
Well, I think that you have the pages and, you know, they're throwing well. They complement each other, power and spin. Lopez is doing a great job. And then you have the bats. I mean, this is a team that just does everything. They've bought into everything. And, you know, when they're playing at home, they've been sold out for, it seems like, ages. That's a hint that they're trying to get a new stadium. So I know Coach Gasso has been working on that. They well-deserved, yes, well-deserved. Yes. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is that I think the pressure's off. I think there was more pressure, as Patty Gasso talked about, to repeat than there was to three-peat. Now, that may change if they get to Oklahoma City. But I think at this point, this is a team that's relaxed. They're having fun. They're putting big numbers up. And when you do that and you play in your wheelhouse, good things happen. So as good as Arkansas's been, and they've had an outstanding season so far, I think they're going to run into a buzzsaw here.
Yeah, and Oklahoma is undefeated at home, so they play very well in Norman. They love to play in front of that crowd. And I think that Shea Knighton has really gotten going. Whichever way.
I'll write you a prescription for that later.
Thank you. I love it. I think I might know what it is, and we'll talk about it later. But I think that Shea Knighton has got hot the last part of the season, and when she gets hot, it just seems like Oklahoma she's their own spark plug and adds another dimension to their offense. As she was kind of struggling with some knee issues earlier on in the season, she looks good.
Yeah, it'll be a big weekend for Mary Half and for Arkansas to try and go in there and get something done, but they'll certainly be up against it going into Sooner Land and taking on the two-time defending champs. I think we're ready, ladies and gentlemen, for number 9 on the lineup card, bringing it home for us. Gimme some Jimmy.
Gimme some Jimmy.
Gimme Jimmy.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Golf clap.
All right, first question is actually kind of a suggestion for Beth and Holly to come up with something here. I need a little help.
Okay.
Maybe you heard some of our other softball analysts this season have been let's say very jealous of your podcast time. I know Megan Willis had an on-air plea, yes, to get on here.
Okay.
I spent the weekend with out in Arizona with everybody's favorite Canadian, Danielle Laurie. She would love to get a little airtime. So I think if Beth and Holly should come up with some kind of competition and we let one of them come on one of these days, they have to
win a competition to be the guest.
Exactly. So I'm tasking you two with something to make it worth their while, or worth our while. Let's put it that way.
Here's one of my thoughts, is to, over the course of this weekend, with their on-air partners, or with whomever, I think they need to come up with an SNL-type spoof of the podcast, and whoever comes up with the best Saturday Night Live spoof of the podcast in like a minute or two, we would look at those videos or listen to those podcasts and determine who gets to come on the show. What do you think of that?
Brilliant.
I was accepting cash gifts personally, but okay, and that.
BMO, I love it, and you can see that that doctorate is already reaping rewards of
brilliant
ideas.
Let's get the rally cap staff in there. Let's get, you know, whoever, all comers, really. Send them to the @7innings podcast, and we'll look at them all on the social media. Jimmy,
can I say one other idea too? Is let's look up who had the best stats in the postseason, since we are now in the postseason, and whoever had the best stats in the postseason as a player gets to come on.
Ooh.
Oh,
that's.
Oh, I like it.
Send it out to research. Where's J-Mac?
Research.
All right. Couple more quick things here. I got one for Amanda. You were a very high level pitcher. How many times in college did you intentionally hit someone?
Oh.
Ooh. The true answer would be zero. Give me some Jimmy.
I'm so disappointed in you.
I know. And I bet you somebody like Daniel Lorre like told you to ask me that, because I bet her number is way different than mine. And we both know it. I think we both accept it, but I truly don't think I ever did. I really didn't. Sorry to let you down, Holly.
You want America to believe that you never played some chin music for a longhorn or a lady bear?
Never, ever, Doc Mo. I'm sorry, Holly, Michelle. I know I'm letting everybody down right now, you guys. But
yes, Michelle. Michelle.
Kick me off the team.
No, let's ask Michelle. Is she?
Yes, Smitty.
Well,
we know. Wait, Vegas Vicky is setting the over-under on 25. 25 for Smitty hit.
Well, I'm just going to tell you of one experience. I had this was in the Japanese Professional League. And one of the players from a big rival team kept pointing her bat at me.
Ooh.
And, you know, that's like a sign of disrespect, right? Like, I'm going to hit you. Like So she was pointing her bat at me, and I kept yelling at her. I was like, tell her to stop pointing her bat at me. Tell her to stop. So I was brushing her back. And then one time I was like, I'm not brushing her back anymore. I'm going to plunk her. And I was like, I'm hitting her right in the shoulder. So I threw it and I hit her in the shoulder. Well, I threw it at her shoulder and I hit her in the head. And then they had to cart her off on a, like a
TMI.
Anyway, no, she was fine. She came back in the next inning, but then I felt bad and I had to buy her a gift, because, you know, that's the Japanese way. And I was like, see, Michelle, that's what you get for throwing at somebody.
Or me.
So she was fine.
It's a balance. Like, there's people like me, and then I get balanced out, like, with people like Michelle Smith.
Like,
you know,
yeah, evil.
Yeah,
it's Vader. There and is the no Princess
free
Leia.
Passage. No free passage. There's no free passage no. down
I
the Smitty River.
Being competitive. I like women who are competitive, so I'm all for it.
All right, so don't think less of me, people.
You know, barring head injuries, of course.
No, she was fine.
Yes, fine. Jimmy, what you got?
That's it, Beth. Take us home.
Hey, the mayhem continues, folks. Thanks for joining us here on the 7 Innings Podcast, and follow us on social media at 7 Innings Podcast. And of course, we will see you at all of the 8 super regional sites on the road to the Women's College World Series.